My name is Russell Spatz. I'm an alcoholic. I'm a member of the Carl Gables Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. I haven't found it necessary to have a drink, nor have I had one since January 25th, 1981. So I'm grateful. Well, thank you. I wish I could take credit for it, but since that time, and it's a privilege to be here. It's a privilege whenever I'm in. It's a good thing whenever I'm in an AA meeting. It's a privilege when you're asked to share your experience, strength, and hope. And of course, this is my deal. You don't have to agree with it. It's just my opinion. It's about my life, and may not pertain to you at all. And we'll just kill an hour and see how that goes. I don't know whether, they say AA's like a giant toolbox. There's a wrench to fit every nut that walks through the door, and, maybe I'll be your wrench tonight. Page 29 says, further on, clear-cut directions are given showing how we recover. These are followed by 42 personal experiences. Each individual in the personal stories describes in his own language and from his own point of view the way he established his relationship with God. And I'm going to talk about that stuff, and I'm going to talk about my experience in this deal and how it works for me. And we're on step 7 tonight, and hopefully I'll touch upon that somewhere along the line. And we did 6 last week. I've been doing this for, I came in when I was 31, I'm going to be 65 in March, and raised 4 children, 6 grandchildren, been married for 32 years, self-supported through my own contributions most of the time, and been through the deal. And all I'm going to try to express to you tonight is the way I see this thing and how it works for me. And I know we have people, I know there's a lot of people here that have been through my step series before and have been through this one up to now, so you sort of know what to expect. And and there's probably a few people in here who have never heard me before, have never understood, so are not familiar with the way I do things. The bottom line is I get up here and I don't try to sugarcoat it. I don't try to I don't run it through the filter of will they like it if I say it this way, or how are they going to feel about this, or even though I know it is true to a certain extent that the newcomer is the most important person in the room, I don't skew my steps to the newcomer. I don't worry about that some newcomer is going to run out the room because I mentioned God or Jesus or the Bible or something like that. I don't care. I don't worry about that stuff, because the bottom line is if I actually say something that chases a drunk out of the room, well, then I guess they're not ready to be here. Because I can promise you this, when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, there was nothing anybody was going to say that was going to chase me out of the room, because more than anything else, I didn't want to drink. That's how bad it was. And my personal belief is, if somebody says something that chases you out of the room, you probably haven't drank enough. You hear a lot of people say, for 33 years I've been in AA, and for 33 years I've seen them go out at 5 years, I've seen them go out at 10 years, I've seen them go out at 15 years and 20 years, and I've heard all the bullshit excuses in the world for going out. And if I hear one more time one person say to me, well, if they had said that when I came in, I wouldn't have stayed, I want to puke. Because I don't believe it for a second. I don't believe it for a second, because the same stuff that I'm saying, no matter how horrible it may sound to you, they were saying when I walked through the door. Maybe I didn't hear it. Or maybe I didn't care. Or maybe it went over my head. But there was nothing left for me out there. I had drank myself into oblivion. My life became a bottle. I thought my life was over. It was never going to get better again. I wanted to die. I didn't want to go on living, but I didn't want to stop breathing. This is the only thing that worked for me, and there was nobody that was going to say anything that was going to chase me out of here. And every once in a while, I'd hear something that would piss me off. As a matter of fact, I want to tell you something. When you're as sick mentally, physically, and spiritually as I am, and you come into a room where you're probably going to bump into somebody who's emotionally and spiritually well, you will more than likely hear somebody say something to you, especially if you're sponsored right, that's going to piss you off. In other words, if this is one of these deals, you're sticking around, you're going to do this thing as long as nobody tells you what to do or hurts your feelings, this isn't going to work out for you. Because if you're going to do this thing right, your feelings are going to be hurt many, many times. And you want to know something? There ain't nothing anybody can say to you or do to you in here that if you don't take it in here, it's not going to be twice as bad out there. Because at least in here, they care about you. And the fact of the matter is, I heard things my sponsor said to me, and he, I had three sponsors, they were abusive sponsors. You know, I was an abused sponsee. You know what they say about abused children? They become abusers themselves. And you know, they were not. They would say things to me. You know, in the big book, they'd say things to me like, "Why don't you just go out and drink again? Why don't you get out of here? You know, why don't you shut up?" You know, they would say things to me. They'd say, "Listen, stupid." They were not nice to me. Now, I'm not saying you should do that. And I know about the love and tolerance thing. Apparently, it didn't apply to me. Maybe because my ego was so big or I hurt so many. Maybe they somehow knew some way that every other week I needed to be taken down a notch. Because my ego and my "who the hell do you think you are and you can't say that to me and you don't know who you're talking to" was going to take me out the door. And maybe I was just lucky enough and fortunate enough to be with men who, when I was around them, somehow had the ability in some way of letting me know that I wasn't as smart as I thought I was. Because I knew everything, but unfortunately that's all I knew. And when I was the smartest guy in the bar, I was the drunkest guy in the bar. And I was the guy who was just ruining my life. It's like Carl Menninger says in his book, Man Against Himself, "I'm a typical alcoholic. Men and women who are alcoholics are out to destroy themselves." And I was self-destructive. I've seen all the PhDs. I got all the postdoctorate stuff. I got all the certificates. I can't tell you how many PhDs and doctors I've seen kill themselves and bounce out the doors here. I just had a friend of many years, a wonderful, wonderful man, very talented, a lot of degrees, very intelligent, just kill himself after 2 years. So I've seen him go out. You know, I've seen him go out. And I know this, you know, they don't go out because... they don't go out because somebody said something to them that pissed them off. That may be the excuse for going out, but that's not the reason they go out. Because the people that really want this thing more than anything else stay no matter what. And they start trying to change, because that's what this is all about, change. I am, somebody said as I was walking in here, you know, you haven't told the story about the miners yet. So I thought that was going to be a key for me to tell the miner story, but I'm not going to tell that yet. So I got some other things I want to talk about, but I will eventually tell the minor story. But I'm not exactly 100% sure of why I love 6 and 7 so much. They call them old timer steps. I think I know why they call them old timer steps. They're the steps that for the last 20 years, I probably worked harder than any. Now, I'm a big guy in step three, you know that. Big guy in step three. You know, every meeting I have is about step three. We're going to go into step three and we'll somehow talk about step three because God's a part of everything as far as I'm concerned in the relationship with God. To me, it's very, very clear. I've said it so many times. It probably bears repeating at every meeting how important God is. This whole thing is about a relationship with God. You can do the steps until the cows come home. So the cows come home. You can do them mechanically. You can do them 18 ways from Sunday. I promise you, you are not going to be rocketed in the fourth dimension of existence. You're not going to experience much of heaven. You're not going to get a permanent permanent application of the promises in your life. You're not going to get what they promise in this book unless you thoroughly follow their path. And their path is so abundantly clear, you would have to be willfully blind, which is not difficult for alcoholics. You'd have to play make-believe with the words and the language to not understand that this has to do with developing a relationship with God, not mechanically doing steps. It's not a psychological program. You can bullshit yourself into believing it's not. There is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. You can't manage your life. No human power is going to drag you out of this thing. Only God could and would if he was sought. See to it your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. Let no man say he needs his family back or anybody back. He can say so no matter what. The main thing is that he has his relationship with God. Job or no job, wife or no wife. It's nonsense. Just believe in God and clean house. And over, if you sincerely took such a position, the position of not playing God, not thinking you're God. He's the Father, you're his children. It's very, very clear. Selfishness, self-centeredness, that's the root of our problems. We're driven by our problems centered in our mind, not our body. And if you don't realize that, you're crazy. Just stick around here a few more months. It's not the alcohol. The alcohol, we call it alcoholism because people like us use alcohol because it works better than any other drug out there to cure what the real problem is, and that is something called alcoholism, which has to do with the way we think, the way we feel, the way we are, the way we perceive when we're not drinking. Men and women drink because they like the effect produced by alcohol. They're restless, they're irritable, they're discontented, they're bored, they're lonely. They're every negative thing you could possibly say in the book, unless they can again experience the sense of ease and comfort, which comes at once by taking a few drinks, drinks which they see others taking with impunity. Our alcoholic life seems the only normal one. Our alcoholic life sober seems normal. Our crazy way of thinking, you know what that way of thinking is like before he came in here? That all the things you run after, all the things you think you need in order to make yourself okay, because you're never okay where you are. You always have to have the radio going, or the telephone going, or the texting going, or something going, or looking at the watch, or going here, or going there, or getting this, or adding this onto your life, or doing something to make you feel like you're almost okay. Because I don't know about you, because no matter what was going on in my life, I was a nothing, I was always going to be a nothing. I used to throw something in my body, it made me feel like an almost. When you're an almost, when you're nothing, almost is like top of the world. You know, I mean, really, I mean, if I was such a, you know, they'd say fear of people, I love people. Well, then why'd you always have to be drunk when you were around them? Why'd you always have to go into the bar and get drunk when you're around them? When you got sober, why are you so worried about going to weddings and going here and going there and being around people? You know, the truth of the matter is my entire world was like living in a football stadium with 50,000 people, all of whom either I hated or hated me or judged me or I was worried about or got nervous when I was next to them. And there was no place I could turn where those people that were judging me or were looking at me or I didn't like, or they just populated my brain. If you're an alcoholic, your brain is populated by people that are causing you all sorts of problems. There are people you did something to in the past, or they did something to you in the past, and you worship. Every alcoholic in here has a God. I'm going to tell you what your God is. I'm going to tell you what the God is for alcoholics. Every one of you have a God. As a matter of fact, we all have the same God. It's called feelings. You know the song, Feelings, Nothing More Than Feelings, I Won't Feel. That's your God. If you're an alcoholic, that's all you want to talk about. All you want to talk about is your feelings. All you want to think about is your feelings. All you want to assuage is your feelings. Your whole life is running around. Why do I feel the way I do? When am I going to stop feeling the way I'm feeling? You know, what's caused me to feel this way? How can I fix the way I'm feeling? You go to psychiatry, spend millions of dollars, you pop pills so you don't feel the way you feel. You don't know why you feel the way you feel, you just feel it. You want to talk about how you're angry. You want to talk about why you're sad. You want to talk about why you're upset. You want to talk about why you're depressed. No, why you're very depressed. You want to talk about, why you're bored. You want to talk about why you're lonely. And the one thing you absolutely know, is that your feelings are more important than anything. Yeah, you raped 15 people and, shot the farmer and burned down the house, but you don't understand. You don't understand what it's like. They made me feel bad. You know what I mean? I can justify any action I ever do on the planet. I don't want to talk about my behavior. I want to talk about my feelings, because that's why I did it, because of my feelings. And I'll tell you one thing about my feelings. Whenever I felt bad, it was always somebody else's fault. I was angry because you made me angry, because you hurt my feelings, because you upset me, because you did something. I mean, all I want to talk about is my feelings. And if you don't understand that's true, my feelings ran my world. I think that everything I did was out of free will, like, well, I'm my own man. I'm not my own man. Let me tell you something. Everything I've done in my life where I've hurt people were dictated by my feelings. I've wrecked marriages, wrecked lives, hurt people, hurt children, said things, done things that were absolutely preposterous and terrible, sober. I wish I could say that alcohol made me do it. I wish I could say, well, I'm really a nice guy. You don't understand. Alcohol made me do it. You know, I wish I could say that. I wish I could blame the whole thing of alcohol. Let me tell you something. I've heard many of the same people that I hurt when I was drinking, many of the same ways, cold, stone, sober, even after coming into Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't need alcohol to be an asshole. It's a good adjunct, you know what I mean? But believe me, I am self-centered, selfish in the extreme. And I blow up things, because of my feelings. I make rash decisions that seem very, very plausible at the time because I'm angry, because I'm upset, because I'm sad, because I'm depressed. And if you ask me why'd I do it, I'll say something like, well, I was angry. Well, I feel like it's a justification. Because it's almost part of my personality. It's like part of, you asked me to give up the drink. It's okay. Give up my feelings. I mean, I have a right to feel mad. I have a right to get upset. You'd feel that way too if it wasn't. You think I drink? You think I have a drinking problem? I know you think I have a drinking problem. I don't have a drinking problem. I drink because I have problems. As a matter of fact, my drinking perfectly matches my problems. And pretty soon my problems are going to go away and I'm not going to have to drink anymore. So thank you very much, but why don't you go screw yourself? I mean, my whole brain is a conjunction of all sorts of feelings. And they're always bad thoughts about myself and other people. And I can't stop them. And I can't stop them. And somewhere along the line, like I talked about Tommy last week, and you may have, you know, when you initially come in here, you think you're coming in here because you have a drinking problem. Good place to come if you have a drinking problem. I mean, they call it Alcoholics Anonymous. The key is in the name, you know. You know, probably better going here than the Kiwanis Club because you think you have a drinking problem. I came here because I had a drinking problem to stop drinking. I mean, if it wasn't for the drinking, everything would be okay. So I came here to stop drinking, and I stopped drinking. What a wonderful day when I finally stopped drinking. What an incredible day when I finally stopped thinking about how I was stopping drinking. You know, that obsession. You know how you stop drinking, then you... Then every day you're saying, this is day number three without a drink. You know, you go for 30 or 40 days and you're not drinking, but all you can think about is how you're not drinking, you know? You know, you think about things like, are you willing to go to any, what does it mean, willing to go to any length? Does that mean climbing Mount Everest? You know, I used to think about things like, well, what happens if I walk out of the call room and two guys come up to me with a gun and point it at me and say, drink this bottle of scotch. You know, I mean, you think shit like that, you know what I mean? Because you're an alcoholic. You think people are not going to rob you, they're going to make you drink scotch, you know what I mean? And because, you know, you're crazy. You don't know you're crazy. This is just the way you think. This is the way you thought these crazy thoughts all your life. And then somewhere along the line, when you stop drinking and you give up the desire to drink and you give up the obsession... And it may be after 3 months, it may be up after 4 months, it may be after 10 months, whatever it is. It's 3 o'clock in the morning, and all of a sudden your thoughts are coming at you like that Atari game we were talking about. They're coming at you a million miles per hour, and the more you shoot them down, the faster they come. And you can't get to sleep. And all you know is that you're thinking 50,000 miles per hour, 20,000 thoughts, all bad thoughts about yourself and other people, and nothing's helping. And it's all about fear and worry and all sorts of crap that you can't stop thinking about. Every once in a while, you go to your sponsor and he says something to you and he catches your imagination. You feel good for about an hour and then it comes at you again. And so you run to a meeting. And for the first 15 minutes, you're thinking all that crazy stuff. You know what I mean? And then all of a sudden, you realize somebody's talking and you watch the dancing monkey. You know, and he's saying stuff, and you ought to feel good, and you sort of laugh, and it's sort of entertaining, and some of it is truthful, and it calms you down, makes you feel good, almost like the way a scotch did. And then you walk out the door, and you get in your car, and you drive away, and all of a sudden, here it comes again. And all of a sudden, you start realizing that, you know, you're not drinking, you haven't had a drink for 6 months, and you're flipping nuts. And you can stop the drinking, but how do you stop the thinking? You may even say to yourself, I got to stop thinking like this. I got to stop feeling like this. When is this going to stop? And you say, I got to stop. I'm going to stop doing this. And then 5 minutes later, you're doing it again. You're adding up the budget again. You're worried about where you're going to be next year. You're going to worry about where you're going to be 10 years from now. You're worrying about what happened 2 months ago. You're thinking all sorts of crazy thoughts that you can't even share at meetings because they'll lock you up because, you know, nobody else thinks the way you think. You know, it's doing, and then you start realizing, man, I don't know, I'm not drinking, but I'm suffering from something else. There's something else going on in here. And you're not suffering from something else, you're suffering from something called alcoholism. You see, because if all you have is a drinking problem, the answer is simple, just stop drinking. You don't have to go to these meetings, you don't have to chip in a dollar, but if you suffer from the disease I suffer from, the disease goes on, even after you stop drinking. As a matter of fact, it gets worse. It gets worse because now you don't have the joy juice that you used to use to anesthetize the feelings that you had when you were suffering from alcoholism. Now you're dealing with alcoholism full blown with nothing to make it go away. Except for sex or porn or some other negative thing that's going to somehow take something away from you, or gossip or whatever, some other negative behavior that for a nanosecond, talking shit about other people behind their back, you know, watching bad stuff, doing all sorts of crazy stuff that's self-destructive, that somehow diverts your attention from the sorry ass condition you're in. And the self-hatred you feel about yourself, because you know you hate yourself. Well, it's maybe not you, but it's somebody, because you're there in the shower lathering up, or you're there in the car driving, all of a sudden the voice comes and says, you're a piece of shit, you ought to be dead. And you turn around to say who's telling you that, and there's nobody else in the car but you. With that tape you've been running all your life that you deserve to die because you're not as good as. And you live in a world that's full of mirrors. They're like, there they are. Have you ever looked at some of the things you look at every day when you walk out of here? You know, what this world is offering you? Man, it's unbelievable what they have on TV. The stuff they say you have to buy, get, or have, or be in order to be okay. Ain't nobody can live up to that. You know, I mean, I'll tell you, the weathermen look better than I'll ever look in my life. You know, everybody looks gorgeous on TV and in the movies. Man, if I see one more Viagra commercial, I'm blowing my brains out. I'm not on the beach with that gal, you know what I mean? I'm not doing that. I mean, they got every guy in the world dumbed down to believing if he could just keep a hard on for 4 hours, when he's 70 years old, he'll be okay. Do you really think that's the problem? Some of you guys do think that's the problem. They got every woman in the United States believing if they just had bigger breasts, you know, or smaller stomachs, or whatever it is. The crap, I'm almost glad that the guys are going through it now, because the women have been going through this horse shit for a long time. This vanity crap. Vanity, vanity, all is vanity. It's been going on for years, ever since Ecclesiastes. Somehow, if I look better, you know, if I can fix the vanity stuff, the thing that it looks like in the outside and everything, that's the whole world. It's a giant Kardashian bullshit world, where it's all about how you look. And even they're popping pills and killing themselves. Even the movie stars are popping pills and killing themselves. They're not even good enough because they don't even believe the bullshit. You know what I mean? And that's the world you live in when you walk out the door. You know, just why don't you, as you're walking out the door, why don't you look at the, what are those big things, those big signs? Why don't you look at the billboards and see what everyone is saying to you? When you pass that billboard with that beautiful car, that Jaguar, that XK, whatever it is, well, you know what it's saying to you? You are some piece of crap driving this two-year-old car. Why don't you have a car like that? Why don't you have a dress like that? Why don't you have boobs like that? You know, why don't you have a girl like that? Why don't you have a guy like that? This whole world just designed, and I'll tell you what, and you know something? They have experts that graduate all sorts of colleges and everything like that with degrees to put the perfect image in there to make you feel like you've got to have that to be okay, because you'll never be okay by yourself. And so all you do is just run around trying to buy. I mean, you're looking at a guy who's, listen, I spend more money I didn't have to buy things I didn't like to impress people I didn't, buy things I didn't need to impress people I didn't like that you could possibly imagine. My whole life is about worrying about what other people think about me and why they think this about me and how can I make them think differently about me. And that's just like 1% of the shit that's going through your brain if you're an alcoholic. That's like 1%. I'm leaving out like 95% of the rest of this stuff. So how are you going to fix that deal? When your alcoholic life seems the only normal life. When that kind of stuff seems normal to you. You can't even separate the alcoholism from the non-alcoholism. You can't even separate the alcoholic thoughts from the non-alcoholic thoughts. Because they're all sort of wrapped up in the way you perceive things. You know, we're cynics. We don't believe anything. It's all a bunch of bullshit. Everybody's full of crap. That's too good to be true. It's always too good to be true. If it's good, it can't be true. If it's bad, oh, that's bad. Must be true. You know, that's the way our mind thinks. We're just negative, negative to the core. You know, even as we listen to people in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, 20% of the people are saying, this guy's full of shit. And that's not even them. They don't even realize that that's the disease. That's the disease. The disease is so strong that even in the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, our best thinking, when you wrap it all together, works against the program. The program says what? It says, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. You do exactly what we did. It's written in black and white. You'll get what we got. And what does the fellowship come up with? Take what you like and leave the rest. Even our best thinking on our best day somehow waters this thing down so that you don't have to do it. The program says we lose all prejudice even against organized religion. We begin to see where religious people are right. It even talks about every Thatcher coming with Bill Wilson with a simple religious idea. And what does the group say? The group says that talks bad about religion and about God all the time. The program just talks about God and developing a relationship with God. And the program says, well, that's and the fellowship says, well, that's your program. This is my program. There's only one program. And we got everything working against it. No wonder only 0.5% actually make it in here to more than 20 years. And who knows how many people make it to actually emotional sobriety, actually make it to the fellowship of the Spirit, because the only requirement to get into Alcoholics Anonymous, it doesn't take much. All you need is a desire to stop drinking. It doesn't even have to be an honest desire to stop drinking. It used to be, if you read Alcoholics Anonymous when it first came out, the only requirement for membership was an honest desire to stop drinking, and then they took out the word honest, because it was like too high a bar for alcoholics. They didn't want to offend anybody. Everything we do is designed to somehow water this thing down, and we put a veneer on it like it's a good thing, because we don't want to hurt anybody's feelings, and that's codependency. Because all we spend more time, we put like everything we do, we put a little veneer on it to make it virtuous. I mean, in the old days, we're going to talk about this in a little bit, they used to have you get down on your knees before you get into a meeting and give your life to God. Now, that may seem a little extreme, and it was a little bit extreme, but I'll tell you something, there were people that are doing it because they were desperate. I can tell you this, the meetings were a little bit different. Now, we don't do that anymore. We've become kinder and softer and easier. So now what we do, we do something like that. We don't force anybody to get down on the knees. We pick up a white chip. That's all we do. We just a little bit of humility, just a little bit. You know, it's humbling to get down on your knees. It's a humbling thing to get down on your knees. You know, one of the things that they realized in this program, that if you're an alcoholic, the one thing you need is ego, deflation, and death, periodically and routinely. You may not like that, but that's what you need. I mean, I know we all want to be the greatest, the richest, the wealthiest, the most sought after, the most wonderful. You know what this program says we need? Ego, deflation, and death. You know what it means? You know when you get down on your knees in front of a group of people, you know what that is? That's humiliating. That's humbling. You know why they did that? Because that was part and parcel of the program of recovery. It was absolutely necessary. The program of recovery is not necessarily painless. Drinking alcohol is the desire to get away from the pain. Taking drugs is the desire to get away from the pain. Smoking dope is the desire to get away from the pain. Lying, cheating, stealing, making excuses, not showing up at work, not answering the phone, ripping up the mail. That's getting away from the pain. This is a program where you confront the pain, you embrace the pain, you go through the suffering. That's what this program is all about. Dealing with a bunch of people that don't want to do any of that and don't want to hear any of that. So the first thing they did in this program is say, get used to it. Get down. You want this thing? Get down on your knees. And that's what they did. Then as the program grew, all of a sudden we changed it. The fellowship. Well, People's Anonymous here. Changes. Now we just pick up a white chip. Anybody want a white chip? Because it is a little humbling. You know, that's the way I did it. It is a humbling experience to sort of force somebody, if they want to join the program, to walk from the back of the room to the front of the room and actually pick up a chip. It's almost like you're saying to people, I need help. Wow. You know, I don't know. I did it, so I guess it works. Some people do it. But then we even change that. Why do that? Why hurt people, you know? Well, if you're a little embarrassed, we'll put it right here. And you can pick it up under the cover of darkness after the meeting's over. Why don't you just buy him a drink? Why don't you just buy him a drink? You know, take what you like and leave the rest. You don't like God, you know, buy him. You know, I mean, it's like amazing how over a period of time this fellowship will somehow take a program that works marvelously, and because of our defects in character and our thinking, our crazy thinking, water it down so that it doesn't work anymore. Or it works half-assed. And what they found, there's a great essay, and I'll send it to anybody who wants it, called The Strong Cup of Tea. And what we find in here, as you see it all the time, is that this program makes a lot of promises of what kind of extraordinary life you can have. But what they found is that you can actually come in here and do this thing sort of half-assed, you know, half measures, and stay sober, stay physically sober for a long period of time, for 5 years, for 10 years, for 15 years, and then you'll leave the drinking, but you won't get what they got. You won't get that rocket ship ride. You won't get the things they got. Because there's just something about going farther. And then we talked about the sixth step. There's something, when you get in here, one of the things that I noticed after I was in here for a while, I don't know how many people noticed it, I don't think I'm the only one who's noticed this, when you're in here for a while, there's a big program, a lot of people, you notice that even though there's a lot of people, and nobody's better than anybody else, and we're all the same, and there but for the grace of God goes us, but you do notice, at least I noticed, that were people in here that had something that I wanted. I'm talking about sober. We were all sober. Everybody in AA was sober. Everybody had sobriety. But there were certain people, you know, there are leaders in AA. You know that, right? You know that. You know there are leaders in AA. You know, I know how I know that? Because we have a tradition that says our leaders are but trusted servants. You can always tell the leaders. You know how you can tell the leaders? Because they're servants, because they serve. Leaders serve. You look at people that are serving, that are out doing service, they're out helping people, out doing stuff, that are service, out extending themselves, who are doing more than just... Now, there's the fellowship, which is made out of the enlisted people. You know, they're the people that, well, just don't drink and go to meetings. Isn't that the program? Don't drink and go to meetings. That's the program. Don't drink and go to meetings. That's all. Just don't go drink and go to meetings. But there's another crew, you know, in this deal called the Fellowship of the Spirit. In the last page of the big book, page 164, it says, you'll certainly see some of us in the Fellowship of the Spirit. And the Fellowship of the Spirit is made up of a whole different crew. They talk about in the sixth step. They say in the sixth step, this is the step that separates the men from the boys. I mean, this isn't me talking. This is the sixth step. This is the 12 and 12. This is what it says. This is the step that separates the men from the boys or the women from the girls. You know, one of the things you find out in here is when you guys have been to discussion meetings. Haven't you? You know what they talk about in discussion meetings, right? Feelings, right? How they feel, how people feel, you know? I'm depressed, I don't feel good, I had a bad day, you know? This is the step that separates the men from the boys. So declares a well-loved clergyman who happens to be one of AA's greatest friends. He goes on to explain, and this is what the test is on the sixth step. I'm not making this up, this is the test. He goes on to explain that any person capable of enough willingness and honesty to try repeatedly step six on all his faults without any reservations, whatever, has indeed come a long way spiritually and is therefore being entitled to be called a man who is sincerely trying to grow in the image and likeness of his Creator. When was the last meeting you went? That's the six-step test. That's the test that separates the men out from the boys, that separates the wheat from the chaff, that separates the people in the fellowship. The fellowship of the Spirit is populated around the sixth step, where there are people that basically settle for just not drinking. Well, get off my back. I'm not drinking. I'm not even thinking of drinking. Get off my ass. You do work your program. I'll work my program. You know what I mean? I'm not drinking. I haven't had a drink in 10 years. This is the step that separates the men from the boys. The people who are here just to be in the not drinking club, hang out in the coffee bar, and just, you know, I haven't had a drink. And you're allowed to do that. You know, AA is about that. You know, the truth of the matter is we really have two fellowships within AA. We have a fellowship of the boys and the girls that are just here to stop drinking, stay out of my sex life, stay out of my money life, stay out of my finances, stay out of it. You know, it's none of your freaking business. You know, I mean, who the hell do you think you are? You work your program, I work mine. And then we have another fellowship called the Fellowship of the Spirit, where everything comes into play. Where, you know, that's the fellowship where they actually believed it when they turned their will and their life over to care of God. You know that part in the third step where it says, in the third step, what does it say? It says right here, this is what they say. We thought well before taking this step, the third step, making sure that we were ready, that we could at last abandon ourselves utterly to Him. Doesn't sound to me like they're just talking about drinking. Sounds to me like they're talking about your sex life. Sounds to me like they're talking about your thought life. Sounds to me like they're talking about your financial life. Sounds to me like they're talking about how you serve Him. I don't know. It says right here, when we sincerely took such a position, all sorts of remarkable things followed. We had a new employer being all-powerful. Not a higher power, the highest power, being all-powerful. He provided what we needed if we kept close to Him and performed His work well. Sounds to me like our number one job now is to be of maximum service to Him and other people, to be a servant. Established on this footing, we became less and less interested in ourselves and our little plans and designs. More and more, we became interested in seeing what we could contribute to life. As we felt new power flow in, as we enjoyed peace of mind, as we discovered we could face life successfully, as we became conscious of His presence, we began to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, the hereafter. We were reborn. I don't know. It sounds to me like it's an all-encompassing thing, that they want your will. Everything you want to do is turned over to Him. And if there's anything left over, like your life, that goes to Him too. It's all about him. That must be why they say in the great fact is this and nothing less, that he's become the central fact of our life. He is doing for us what we can't do for ourselves. I don't know, it says right here, perhaps there is a better way. We think so, for we are now on a different basis, the basis of trusting and relying upon God. I don't know, I'm not making this crap up. This isn't Russell's program, this is the program, trusting and relying upon God. We trust infinite God rather than our finite selves. We are in the world to play the role he assigns. Just to the extent that we do as we think he would have us and humbly rely on him, does he enable us to match calamity with serenity? We never apologize to anyone for depending upon our Creator. We can laugh at those who think spirituality is a way of weakness, paradoxically is a way of strength. The verdict of the ages is that faith means courage. All men of faith have courage. They trust their God. We never apologize for God. Instead, we let him demonstrate through us what he can do. We asked him to remove our fear and direct our attention to what he would have us be. And once we commence to outgrow fear. The boys, all they want to talk about is their feelings. The girls and the boys, all they want to talk about is their feelings and what's going on in their life and all the crap they're going through and the problems they have, you know, and how they can be fixed and why they're having these problems. They just want to dominate the meetings and everything. It's all about me, 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 and how to fix me and why do I feel the way I feel and how can I get better. And all the men and the women are doing is trying to go out there and help other people. They're just showing up at the meeting to see if there's anybody they can help. And there's two different fellowships. There's a fellowship of the Spirit, and there's just the people that are just hanging in there and settling. And of course, the problem is we all meet in the same rooms. And the people that just want to talk about their feelings and what's going on in their life and all their problems, you know, they don't want to hear about the other crap. And the people that just want to help other people and want to talk about God and the miracles that he's doing in their lives, they just can't understand why the other people don't want that deal. Want to keep on wallowing in the crap they're wallowing in and experiencing the same life they were experiencing before they were drinking, just dry drunks without the booze. They can't understand why they don't want it. And that's just the deal. And that's how it works. And that's what happens. And as Dr. Bob says in his story, if you're an atheist and you're agnostic and have some other sort of intellectual pride, or I should say false pride, which keeps you from what this program is talking about, I feel sorry for you. Your Heavenly Father will never let you down. And like it said in Alcoholics Anonymous number 3, in the back of the book, right after the story about Bob, it says this. Dr. Bob's right after Dr. Bob's nightmare. Bill Dotson says the following. In talking about that separation and noticing that there was some sort of difference between him and Dr. Bob and Bill Wilson, he says, it would be hard to estimate how much AA has done for me. I really wanted the program and I wanted to go along with it. I noticed that others seemed to have such a release, a happiness, is something that I thought a person ought to have. I was trying to find the answer. I knew there was even more, something I hadn't got. I knew there was even more, something I hadn't got. And I remember one day, a week or two after I'd come out of the hospital, Bill was at my house talking to my wife and me. We were eating lunch, and I was listening. I was listening. I was trying to find out why they had this release that they seemed to have. Bill looked across at my wife and said to her, Henrietta, the Lord has been so wonderful to me, curing me of this terrible disease that I just want to keep talking about it and telling other people. I thought, I think I have the answer. Bill was very, very grateful that he had been released from this terrible thing. And he had given God the credit for having done it. And he's so grateful about it, he wants to tell other people about it. That sentence, the Lord has been so wonderful to me, curing me of this terrible disease, that I just want to keep telling other people about it, has been a sort of golden text for the AA program and for me. And then later on in the book, he sold himself short. You know, the guy in that thing, who was one of the guys that was brought up between 1935 and 1939, around that period of time, it says, this latest part of my life has had a purpose, not in the great things accomplished, but in daily living. Courage to face each day has replaced the fears and uncertainties of earlier years. Acceptance of things as they are has replaced the old impatient chomping at the bit to conquer the world. I've stopped tilting to windmills. Instead, I've tried to accomplish the little daily tasks, unimportant in themselves, the tasks that are an integral part of living fully. Where derision, contempt, and pity were once shown me, I now enjoy the respect of many people. Where once I had casual acquaintances, all of whom were fair-weather friends, I now have a host of friends who accept me for what I am. And over my AA years, I've made many real, honest, sincere friendships that I shall always cherish. I'm rated as a modestly successful man. My stock of material goods isn't great, but I have a fortune in friendships, courage, self-assurance, and an honest appraisal of my own abilities. Above all, though, above all, the most important thing, above all, the great fact, above all, is that I have gained the greatest thing accorded to any man, the love and understanding of a gracious God who has lifted me from the alcoholic scrap heap to a position of trust where I have been able to reap the rich rewards that come from showing the little love for others and from serving them as I can. And there is no question that's the same thing that Bill Wilson said. There's no question that's the same thing that Bill Dotson said. There's no question that's the same thing that Dr. Bob said. There's no question that that's exactly what this book is all about. Every one of these people that had this incredible release that they wanted, that had taken the sixth step, and we're going further, and when the fellowship of the Spirit cherished, the most important thing is their relationship with God that had totally changed them and gave them gratitude for it. And 80% of people in AA don't want to hear this crap. And that's the fellowship that you're involved in right now. But the good thing about it is you make your own decision as to what you want. If you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you're ready to take certain steps. If you want it, then you can have it. If you don't want it, don't worry about it. You ain't never going to get it anyway. You see, rarely have we seen a person fail who's thoroughly followed our path. You won't fail if you thoroughly follow the path. If you take what you like and leave the rest, you know what I mean? You're going to get exactly what you're supposed to get. You know, there are no mistakes, man. It's really simple. It's a really simple deal. So now we've taken this sixth step. At least some of us have taken this step. Some of these, according to this, some people, there are some people in here that want more. They're like that guy Bill Dotson. They knew there was something more. They knew there was something more. There are some people in here who can't wait till this meeting is over. There are some people in here saying, I wish this would go on to 3 more hours. Believe it. There are people in here that will sit here for 3-4 hours just so they could possibly learn the secret. And there are other people in here that can't wait to get out the door. And that's the difference between 20 years and 30 years sobriety and somebody who's going to drink in a couple of years anyway or feel sorry for themselves anyway. You understand what I'm saying? And you'll always have that deal in the AA. You'll always have that deal. You know, and it'll get worse and worse. You know, as soon as we started, you know, it's a giant funnel. They come in ready, they come in not ready. They come in wanting it, they come in not wanting it. We don't put them on their knees anymore. You understand what I'm saying? So you get people in here that aren't really ready. They just want a little relief, or they want to get laid, or they want their girlfriend back, they want their boyfriend back, they want the house in the country, they want the car, they want the Ferrari, they got the one. You're going to get that deal. They don't want any of this stuff. They just want to stop drinking, let me out of here. Now, the truth of the matter is actually in step meetings like this, you probably get more of the ones that really want the fellowship of the Spirit because I went to step meetings because I would follow guys around because I wanted this deal. I wanted to hear about, this is the deal I wanted to hear about. And so once you take step six and you start understanding that the funnel, that the road gets narrower, it's no longer the broad highway there, because it's the narrow road. It gets narrow. It gets narrower and narrower. You know? It's not only the not drinking. It's the not going to South Beach. You understand what I'm saying? Now, you know, the boys will argue against that, get all mad and pissed off. They have a right to go there. Well, then go there. Go there and focus on that stuff and focus on that deal. Make that the most important part of your life. Make that the central part of your life. Just watch all the people out, and then that's your life. Then that's your deal. Then that's what you'll concentrate on. You understand what I mean? You have a choice. Nobody's telling you what to do. You know, but just don't be a baby about it. Don't think that you can do this thing any way you want and be any person you want and act any way you want and expose yourself to anything you want to expose yourself to and still get what they got. Don't read the book the way the book is written. It's pretty clear. It's pretty concise as to what's going on, what these guys were focused on, what the book is focused on. So once you get through the sixth step, it becomes very clear. It talks about settling. It talks about, well, the test is right in here. The men are the ones who have come a long way spiritually and are entitled to be called men who are sincerely trying to grow in the image and likeness of their Creator. That's the men. Men and the women are sincerely trying to focus on God and grow in His image and likeness. Now, I have a question for you. If that's the sixth step, and that is the step in our book, and that's the men, how many people have been to a meeting in the last 5 years where they've talked about, where the topic has been, are you trying to grow in the image and likeness of your Creator? I'm not talking about one of my meetings. You know what I'm talking about? I'm talking about a discussion meeting. I'm talking about a discussion meeting. Not one of you. And you'll never go to one in Alcoholics Anonymous. Because they don't talk about it. You know why? Because Alcoholics Anonymous is key to the lowest common denominator. if you're lucky to get a sponsor or get with another group of people, you might get to this sort of like this deal right here. But most of the time in AA and AA means you're going to be in pre-K. You understand what I'm saying? Because they don't want to piss anybody off. And the truth is, if they have somebody talking about this stuff, you may have to actually do it. It's going to get some people upset. So if you've got 10 years and you've got 15 years and you've got 20 years and you're still a thumb-sucking crybaby, and you've got all sorts of things going on in your mind where you're pissed off at yourself and other people, maybe pissed off at the speaker. Hey, if you're pissed off at me, that's a good thing. You know what the spiritual axiom is, right? Whenever you're disturbed, no matter what the cause, there's something wrong with you. So if I'm pissing you off, I'm helping you out. You owe me a copayment. It's like a spiritual MRI. You owe me a few bucks, you know what I mean? All it tells me if you're pissed off with me is that you're not sober. All it tells me is you're not, in some way, you're not sober. And you know something? If I can piss you off, you know what that means? That means there's a billion people out in the world that can piss you off. Because I'm just representative of something else that's going to piss you off in the world. There's something that's broken in you that just ain't here. And you're living a pissed off life. You know, and you're either going to get off over it or you're not. Or you're going to ignore it and say, well, that's just the way I am and I'm not going to change. And that's the way it works. So once you accept the six-step thing, and you don't want to settle this thing, then you want to go on. And then you go on to the seventh step, which has to do with something that I'm very unfamiliar with. It's something called humility. And I don't know anything about humility, but I know about humiliation. Let me read you this one part, and we're going to get out of here in about 5 minutes. I promise we'll get this done, but let me just... This is from page 101 of Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers. And I've read it many times before here, but it's apropos here. This has to do with AA in 1935, 36, 37. You know, when they wrote the book, Rarely Have I Seen a Person Fail, this was their path. This is what they did, okay? On the other hand, we were taking them upstairs and getting them on their knees to surrender, which I felt was very important. The surrender was more than important. It was a must. Bobby, who came into AA in February of 1937, recalled that after 5 or 6 days in the hospital, when you had indicated that you were serious, they told you to get down on your knees by the bed and say a prayer to God, admitting you were powerless over alcohol and your life was unmanageable. Furthermore, you had to state that you believed in a higher power who would return you to sanity. There you can see the beginning of the 12 steps. He said, we called that the surrender. They demanded it. You couldn't go to a meeting until you did it. You couldn't go to a meeting. Imagine if you couldn't get in this meeting unless you did that. There would be less people here. But the people here would be pretty damn, it'd be a cool deal, wouldn't it? Be pretty. We could talk about a lot of stuff, couldn't we? You couldn't go to a meeting until you did it. If by accident you didn't make it in the hospital, you had to make it in the upstairs bedroom over the Williamson's house. Dorothy S.M. recalled the 1937 meetings when the men would all disappear upstairs and all of us women would be nervous and worried about what was going on. After about a half an hour or so, down would come the new man, shaking, white, serious, and grim, and all the people who were already in AA would come trooping down after him. They were pretty reluctant to talk about what had happened, but after a while, they would tell us that they had a real surrender. I often wonder how many people will... that come in now would survive an experience like that, a regular old-fashioned prayer meeting. Now, that was the way they did it back then, and they're talking about the surrender. That's how important it was. It was one of the most important things. Now, let me read you something from the seventh step. Since this step is so specifically concerned with itself with humility, we should pause here to consider what humility is and what the practice of it can mean. Now, a lot of people think that, now, what I just read presumably had to do with the first step. You think it had to do with the first step. There's a huge correlation between the first step of surrendering and humility and the seventh step, which is even further surrender. Man, if you think the only thing you surrender is that you're powerless over alcohol and your life has become unmanageable, wait till you start surrendering everything else. All the other stuff that you think you have an absolute right to hang on to and nobody can tell you to let it go. Because you have to surrender that stuff to get rid of those old ideas, or else the result, by the way, is nil until you let go absolutely. Stuff that you are in love with because you think it's part of your personality. Stuff that has to do with sex and money and clothes and cars and who you hang out with and where you go and how you live your life and where you spend your time. Things that have to go to sports and football games and recreation, and also travel, and all sorts of stuff that dominate your thinking in your life, the things that you worry about, spend money about, you know, agonize about, the whole thing you build your life about, that you know you'd be okay if you had it. Where do you start surrendering that stuff if you take the six steps seriously? Where do you start really, really focusing, making God the centerpiece of your life, and realize he doesn't give a shit about any of that stuff? He doesn't give a crap about any of that stuff. People that are running after that crap. Where do you stop surrendering that deal, you know? That's when it gets interesting. Certainly no alcoholic and surely no member of AA wants to deprecate material achievement. You guys ever read this? Nor do we enter into a debate with many who so passionately cling to the belief that to satisfy our basic natural desires is the main object of life. That's all you guys think about. All you guys thought about before you came in here was getting laid. All you guys thought about was whether you had a girlfriend or a boyfriend or a husband or wife. All you thought about is whether you had a car or whether you had a job or whether you had money. All you thought about was your basic natural instincts. You came in here, you put the plug in the jug, and you sit around discussion meetings talking about the same shit. Talking about the same shit, thinking about the same shit all the time, and wondering why you're not getting any better. And getting pissed when people say that you got to stop thinking about that shit. Getting pissed at because you think that's not the program of recovery, because you think it just has to do with not drinking alcohol. But we are sure that no class of people in the world ever made a worse mess of trying to live by this formula than alcoholics. For thousands of years, we have been demanding more than our share of security, prestige, and romance. That's right, girls. Romance. Blow up the Lifetime channel. It's not the answer. The guy ain't there that's going to make you happy. And guys, the girl ain't there going to fix you. As a matter of fact, if you need a girl to fix you, you ain't never going to be fixed. If you think a guy's going to fix you, you ain't never going to find that deal. When we seemed to be succeeding, we drank dreams till greater dreams. When we were frustrated, even apart, we drank for oblivion. Never was there enough of what we thought we wanted. In all these strivings, so many of them well-intentioned, our crippling handicap had been lack of humility. We lacked the perspective to see that character building and spiritual values had to come first. Seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all things will be added unto you. See the relationship with him is right. Great events will come to pass for you and countless others. First things first. First things first. It goes on to say, and I'm going to skip it, says, for us, the process of gaining a new perspective was unbelievably painful. Now, here's the good news. Here's the good news. If you want to do this deal, if you're one of these guys and you want to do this deal, I got some great news for you. If you want to get involved in this deal and come out the other end and really have that new freedom, it's going to hurt like shit. You're going to suffer. You're going to be grounded down. The check's going to bounce. The money's not going to flow. The problems are going to happen. You're going to learn how to live life to the fullest and help other people while you're losing all the stuff that you think is so necessary for your existence. It's going to be a bad deal, but it's going to be, hey, listen, but it's going to be great later on. It was only by repeated humiliations that we were forced to learn something about humility. It was only at the end of a long road marked by successive defeats and humiliations and the final crushing of our self-sufficiency that we began to feel humility as something more than a condition of groveling despair. This may sound like step one, but it's step seven. Step seven is like step one on all the other crap that's wrong with you. Step one took care of the alcohol. Step seven takes care of all the crap that's the innermost stuff in your mind that's really causing you to want to drink. And you want to something? The pattern what was the pattern of step one? You kept on drinking until you were crushed, you were insufficient, your life became unmanageable, and you were forced on your knees to come in here. How do you think you get rid of the other stuff? It's the same deal. Every newcomer in Alcoholics Anonymous is told and soon realized for himself that his humble admission of powerlessness over alcohol is his first step towards liberation from his paralyzing grip. So it is that we first see humility as a necessity. And that's what I found. To make a long story short, what I have found in my life is as I do this thing, I don't want to make it sound so bad that there's no fun or anything like that. It's incredible. It's a wonderful life. What I found is you go through the crapper. You go through the crapper. You know, one of the books that they said was absolutely necessary, absolutely necessary. There were three books they said. There was the Sermon on the Mount, 1 Corinthians 13, and the book of James. Chapter 1 of the book of James says, rejoice when you have troubles. Rejoice when you have problems. He says, because by persevering through the problems and focusing on God and getting through the problem, it grows your faith and makes you mature. And you become, instead of a thumb-sucking crybaby, you become like tensile steel. You don't apologize for God. It relieves the fear. You'll be able to handle life in some sort of way that seems, I don't know, like you're handling things. It looks like you don't have any problems. It's just that you're overcoming the world. You're overcoming problems because you turn it all over to God. Now, there's two ways of doing it in here. You can do it the alcoholic way while you're not drinking. You can have a problem. You can whine. You can cry. You can suck your thumb. You can go to meetings. You can run around. You can pop pills. You can go to psychiatrists. You can do everything in the world. Watch TV. Get laid. Go to South Beach. Do whatever you can, but not drink and still pick up that medallion and somehow get through it and feel better and feel sorry for yourself. You understand? And you'll get what you got with that. But I can tell you this, what you're not going to get, you're not going to get any type of spiritual or emotional growth. And you will experience that same problem over and over and over again until you're 89 years old. You'll be one of the boys. Or you can go through that problem. You can go through that problem. You can turn towards God. You can rejoice in the fact you can say, I'm going through this stuff, but you want to know something? I know there's a reason why I'm going through it. I know it's to change me. You can do your steps. You can do your inventory. You can talk to other people. You can go out and try to help other people. You can pray about it. You can do the thing that people who are believers do. And somehow you'll get through the other end and you will have changed. And you will never have to go through that problem again. And that's how we change in here. So don't get upset with the problems. The problems are the best things that can happen to you. It's incredible to go through problems. That's the things that's going to change you. Going through. If you're going through the bullshit now, that's a good thing. That's not a bad thing. I feel sorry for the guy in here and the gal in here that is not going through any problems. Because they're the ones that are going to fold like a wet newspaper in the rain. Because let me tell you something. We're all going to die. We're all going to have people around us die. We're all going to be disappointed. Nobody's going to get through this life without having disappointments. You know, I feel sorry for the guys and the gals that, you know, don't have the crap they're going through and aren't working this thing through the problems. Because they're the ones that are going to fold up down the road when things get tough. So God bless you. Thank you. We'll talk about it 8 months later.
Take up a drink, t-shirt now.